Hi folks, Canadian Prepper here. Your time is precious. I'm not going to waste it. Let's cut right to the chase. There's a lot of things that we need to talk about today, guys, including and not limited to antibiotic shortages, diesel shortages, nuclear medication shortages, pharmacies preparing for what they're going to do in the case of civil unrest. We need to talk about the situation developing in Ukraine in Kherson, where they're blasting over the loudspeakers that people need to be out of that town by November 7th. Is this somehow related to the election taking place on November 8th? We'll talk about that. We're also going to talk about Kiev preparing to potentially evacuate 3 million people from that city. What is that all about? Of course, 40% of the nation is out of power as a result of Russian drone strikes on critical infrastructure there. We need to talk about the nuclear escalation, the possibility for using tactical nuclear weapons. Representatives of the Ukrainian government are insisting that we're at the highest risk of nuclear escalation in this conflict thus far. Of course, we're on the cusp of winter. We're about to see energy prices skyrocket as a result of the looming Russian oil price cap, the potential war that's about to ensue between Israel now and Iran, because Netanyahu is saying that with the absence of a nuclear deal on the table, it's looking as though they might have to strike Iranian nuclear facilities. That, of course, will cause the closure of the Strait of Hormuz and cause oil prices to spike. This all around the same time that we're going to see the Russian oil price cap put into place. We also have a situation on the Korean Peninsula where we have 180 North Korean planes skirting the demarcation line, forcing the scrambling of South Korean jets. This has prompted the U.S. to revisit its strategic forces there and pledge even more strategic nuclear capability on the Korean Peninsula, which is, of course, going to piss off China, bringing the world even closer to world war. We also have some wild weather extremes happening here. East Coast heat wave, record temperatures up and along the East Coast. In Toronto, they've had 3 days of record temperatures in plus 20s. We also have out here in the West Coast, blanketed in snow, blizzard-like conditions, knee-deep in snow, knee-deep in winter, a 40 degrees Celsius spread across the country at the same latitude. Guys, the jet stream is broken. It's only going to make matters worse for our ability to grow food and manage our dwindling energy resources. We also have the UK and Russia, who is on the brink of war because the Russians are claiming that they have evidence that the UK was complicit in the orchestration and perpetration of the Black Sea attacks, as well as the Crimean attacks, and of course the Nord Stream attacks. The ambassador is saying that they're going to release that information in the not so distant future. So that was the 3 minute rundown. Let's go into greater depth. Now, if you guys are not aware, there's this thing going around, this graph about the so-called diesel shortage, okay? As you can see throughout history, there have been similar situations where we've been at this low. Now right here, this shows that we have 25 days worth of diesel in storage. This is in the United States. Canada is going to map onto this more or less the same way. You can see that at the height of the pandemic, we had 55 days of diesel shortage. It's important to know that this doesn't mean that we're going to run out of diesel in 25 days, because the market is constantly being supplied by fresh stuff that is being refined. This is just what's in reserve. If all of the diesel production and refining was to stop today, we would have 25 days left. Of course, that is not going to happen. What's important about this, and what hasn't happened throughout any other time in history, was the pandemic and the refinery shutdowns. So here, back in 2008, when we were at a similar point where we're at now, there wasn't a pandemic that prompted the shutdown of all the diesel. There were other factors going on in the world at that time that contributed to that diesel shortages. Now it is very, very different, okay? The pandemic, when we had this huge excess of diesel and the price plummeted, remember when we were at oil being in the negative levels, that's when a lot of refineries just had to shut down their operations. It's not as simple as simply restarting a refinery. And of course, now the demand is increasing. So we have increased demand, significantly less supply, because a lot of those refineries are now offline. Of course, we have the ongoing energy crisis. We have things which have mostly impacted the natural gas industry, but we've had cyber attacks and many other threats to critical infrastructure present themselves. So this is a very unique situation, and this is likely to go a lot lower in the near future because Diesel is only increasing in demand. We have liquid natural gas ships that require diesel. We have the war machines of the world that are ramping up that require diesel. We have increased trade as a result of the pandemic bounce back that we're starting to see. So it's likely that this number is going to continue to diminish. Now, are we going to see real deal diesel shortages? Well, they're already seeing it in some places, but it's mostly on a localized level. It's not nationwide yet because, of course, there still is a lot of diesel. They use about 150 million gallons of the stuff per day in the United States. And it's not like we're, you know, I would say I would be worried when we hit like the 10-day level. That's when I would seriously be concerned. But what happens when the diesel trucks stop rolling after 2 to 3 days? Okay, of the diesel trucks, of diesel stopping, because of course the trucks can't run without diesel. That means that the consolidated food supplies stores, the places that supply the grocery stores, are not going to be able to get the food. And then some of the smaller trucks, of course, are not going to be able to take that food to the grocery stores. And that, of course, is going to amount to food shortages and escalating to hoarding and consumer panic, which is likely going to cause people to panic buy stuff. So the shelves are going to run out even faster. You're going to see gas stations, which are completely emptied of fuel, not just diesel, but also regular gasoline, because in order to get the gasoline to the gas station, it requires a diesel-powered truck. We're going to see supplies of bottled water, canned meat starting to disappear from major retailers. ATMs are going to run out of cash, and banks will likely be able to not be able to process transactions. Container ships and rail transport is also going to be disrupted. So you're going to see a huge ripple effect in a negative way throughout the supply chain. After the first week, automobile travel is going to cease due to the lack of fuel. A lot of people are going to be working from home, as many people have wanted to do for the past 2 years. We're also going to see hospitals start to lack essential supplies. We're already starting to see that with respect to various shortages of medication, which are unrelated to the diesel, but related to other things going on with the global decoupling. We're going to see garbage start to pile up in the streets and not be picked up after the first week because there's just not going to be diesel to pick it up. Okay. Now, obviously, if things ever got this bad, you will start to see the allocation of the limited amount of diesel to emergency services. So I'm quite certain that they will make a case to continue to pick up the garbage after the first week. But of course, it's going to be on a priority basis after that. After the fourth week without diesel, with a complete collapse of the diesel supply, that's when you're going to see clean water supply being exhausted. Water will only be safe for consumption after boiling. All of the nuclear power plants of the world rely on diesel for their backup systems. If there was a nuclear incident and there was no diesel, now we're getting into the far reaches of a all-out diesel disaster, then of course we would have nuclear disasters on our hands. With this lack of clean drinking water after 4 weeks, you would start to see illnesses increase, and that would cause increased burden on the healthcare system, which was already compromised by lack of supplies due to the trucks not rolling in with all of those medical supplies. So this is a very real threat. Right now, I don't think it's something that we need to worry about, you know, in an acute sense, in the sense that it's going to lead to near-term disaster. But with the Russian oil price cap looming on the horizon, and energy is all interrelated, with the situation developing in Israel and Iran that I'm going to talk about, and Saudi Arabia, there is a potential for oil prices to skyrocket, and increased oil prices are only going to make it harder to refine the diesel. And so that's just going to, you know, increase the likelihood that this actually is a problem that gets realized. Right now, not a huge concern, even though there are material shortages in some states. I believe some of the states where there is a shortage right now are Oklahoma, North Carolina, and parts of Tennessee. So there's definitely a localized threat there, but it's not on a national level yet. Now, let's go to antibiotics. So here in Canada, and I'm assuming the United States as well, there's amoxicillin shortages. There's also shortages of Tylenol for children. And this has been a big one for the last couple of months. They're saying that a lot of these shortages of medications are due to the fact that a lot of people, you know, have been living in a bubble for the last 2 years. Everything's finally opened up. and people are getting sick, you know, left and right. And so these medications are in very, very high demand. Now, if you recall, we did a video with Jace Medical. They're a company that provides preppers with an emergency supply of antibiotics. Antibiotics are probably one of the most important things to level up your first aid kit. It makes any, you know, run-of-the-mill first aid kit into a very sophisticated first aid kit, medical kit, okay? If you can add antibiotic medication, because this is probably one of the most important types of medication just throughout the 20th century, the 21st century. So many people have been saved from antibiotics. And of course, in a grid down environment, let's say you have to procure firewood or you just have to do more physically laborious stuff. Let's say the heat isn't working as well. So that's going to reduce your immune system. All of these things are going to work towards an increased likelihood that you are going to injure yourself or need some sort of antibacterial medication in order to, you know, just stave off illness. So it's important that you have an emergency supply. Unfortunately, trying to get this from your doctor is typically, you know, depending on the relationship you have with your doctor, maybe they'll prescribe it to you for emergency purposes. With Jace, it's now approved in Canada and the United States. It's like a no questions asked thing. You buy the Jace Medical Kit, which includes a variety of different medications, antibiotic medications, and they basically line up a phone call with a doctor. It's very pain-free. You don't have to feel guilty about it or anything like that. They know you're doing it for emergency purposes. And you get your stuff in the mail a couple weeks later. Easy peasy. I would encourage you all to do it. I'm not sure what their amoxicillin supply looks like right now. Perhaps they still have some. But that's another thing to factor in, is that if you had done this last year, you would not be dealing with these amoxicillin shortages. We also potentially have a shortage of nuclear-related medication. This is from St. Rita's Medical Center for Imaging. And I received this email from a subscriber who indicated that according to this pharmacy, and many other pharmacies across the country are dealing with radiation medication sickness, acute radiation sickness medication shortages, okay? And so they're saying that their contracted vendor for nuclear medicine doses will have a major shortage in supply between November 9th and 22nd, limiting our supply for procedures. Supply is limited due to 5 of the 6 nuclear reactors worldwide being offline. Jubilant will only supply 35% of the capacity, will not supply bulk doses for after our emergent exam. So I'm not sure if this is related to, you know, the increased demand because the government's stockpiling stuff right now. We know there was a shortage in potassium iodide medication, the FDA certified stuff from ThyroSafe, the stuff that we saw at CanadianPreparedness.com. There has been a supply in other types of nuclear related medications. So this potentially is all interrelated. We also have another email that I have here from a person who works in a pharmacy. They say they work for a third party of a major pharmaceutical company. Last night at 2:30 a.m., I received an update to our SOP, not sure what that is, which goes over a business continuity plan in the case of a disaster or event. It lists the crisis management team members and how they will meet to go over anticipated or unanticipated events. It goes on to talk about possible hacking or having one of our locations being vandalized or physically destroyed. Talks of employees being fatally injured and the impact scenarios that go into localized martial law, civil unrest, regional epidemic mitigation, cyber attack, or physical sabotage. So pharmacies are preparing for a contagion-like situation. You remember the movie Contagion, where everybody is freaking out and raiding the pharmacies because they couldn't get their jabs fast enough? Well, we may well see something like that in the not-so-distant future. So the shortages are real, and you know, a lot of it's a do with the bullwhip effect of the COVID-related supply chain issues that we continue to see. And I think that's going to be a problem that continues well into the future, especially after this Russian oil price cap goes into place. Now, with respect to the war is intensifying. The war is about to get really, really crazy because apparently Kiev is preparing to evacuate 3 million people from the capital. 40%, this is according to Ukrainians now, 40% of the grid has been damaged by the Russian drone strikes. Now, if they're saying it's 40%, there's a good chance that it's much greater than that, because of course both sides tend to minimize their losses and maximize their gains. The director for the security of the Kiev municipal government has warned that the city may lose their entire electricity system if Russia continues striking Ukrainian critical infrastructure. According to the report, Kiev authorities expect that if worse comes to worse, they would have at least 12 hours notice before the grid collapses completely. This is when we're going to start informing people and requesting them to leave. Should the Ukrainian capital face a total blackout, there would also be no water supply and the sewage systems would grind to a halt. Where are these people going to go to? The countryside where there is no water at all? Or are they going to cause a massive refugee crisis into Europe, the likes of which the country or the continent has never seen before? Even the Syrian refugee crisis will seem like a walk in the park after you have Kiev evacuating 3 million people, not counting all of the other cities that are likely going to follow in suit. So this is a major, major reveal from the Ukraine government. And you always have to wonder, because recall at the start of this whole thing, Zelensky told his people that they didn't have to worry about the Russians invading. And then within 24 hours, they had declared martial law and they were putting guns in the hands of everybody, every able-bodied citizen, and any, you know, military-aged male was drafted into the military and could not leave the country. If they did, there was penalties, some by imprisonment, some by other means. But we know that we can't take either side on their word. Recall that the Russians were saying that they were de-escalating in days running up to the actual invasion on February 24th. And the guys who were at the Duran YouTube channel were saying, see, they're not going to invade. And, you know, all those guys were saying they're never going to invade. And that's because they always maximize whatever the Russians say and they minimize whatever the Ukrainians say. The fact is, both sides are liars, because you have to be. It's just the name of the game. You have to use subterfuge to try to confuse and bamboozle your enemy. Now, on the confusing and bamboozle front, we have the Russians seemingly enticing the Ukrainians into the Kherson area. Now, interesting story out of Kherson. Apparently, they've been blasting on the loudspeakers there and been going door to door, telling people in the town of Kherson in the south of Ukraine, where the big battle is about to erupt between Ukraine and Russia, that everybody there needs to leave by November 7th. They're distinctly saying everybody needs to be out of Kherson by November 7th. All of the civilian population, I think the population there was around 100,000 people, more or less, within the city, that is, and then the surrounding regions probably a lot more. But they're saying they want everybody out. Why are they saying they want everybody out? Because it's going to turn into a bloody war zone. It's quite possible. Of course, the Ukrainians' window for opportunity for doing this offensive is closing, because once the ground freezes, that's when the Russians and their 500,000 troops are going to start pouring over the river and start, you know, intensifying their invasion. I do believe, and a lot of people believe that as well. Some people are saying that they're trying to entice the Ukrainians in to this region so that they concentrate their forces. And some of the more far out theories are suggesting that they might be doing this so they can utilize a tactical nuclear weapon. Because Putin just got off the phone with Macron a couple days ago, and apparently, and I don't know if this was taken out of context or not, he had said to Macron that, you know, Hiroshima proves that you don't need to target a major city with a nuke in order to end a war. So this is the whole escalate to de-escalate policy. We use a nuke, it escalates, but, you know, it causes everybody to kind of come to their senses and come to the bargaining table. So was this thing that he said to Macron, was that just taken out of context? I don't know. I don't have the full transcript of the interview. Nonetheless, apparently Putin did say that you don't need to target a major urban center with a nuke in order to de-escalate a war. So that could potentially be something that is going to happen. And like I say, both sides, depending on who you listen to, both sides are winning and the other side is losing. Boris Johnson continues insisting that Russia is going to lose all of the annexed territory that they currently claim, like all of it, including Crimea, which of course the Russians have distinctly said that they would take that as a threat to their existence as a nation, and making veiled threats of basically using nuclear weapons. So we know that this is only going to intensify in the coming weeks ahead. I would encourage people, get your medication, Stockpile your food, your gasoline. Doesn't mean you need to go overboard. And the fact is, only a very, very small percentage of people of the population is ever going to watch these videos. So it's not even going to put a dent in the supply chain. It's not like we're going to cause a panic or anything. The panic is going to be caused when people do actually realize that the reservoirs of both diesel and natural gas in Europe are starting to dwindle and that they're not being refilled, and that that Russian oil is not making its way directly to market. It has to be laundered through all these other channels, which is going to jack the price. And of course, if Netanyahu in Israel now is, like he's saying, is going to strike Iranian nuclear facilities, then we have a potential where Israel and Iran are going to war. That's going to likely close the Strait of Hormuz, especially if Saudi Arabia gets involved and that whole Yemeni situation flares up, if we have more attacks on Saudi oil fields. Guys, the price of oil could go totally parabolic and to the outer limits this winter. We're really going to see, I mean, really in the next year, because it's not really going to be until next year where Europe doesn't have filled natural gas reservoirs where we're going to see what the real outcome is and the real the economic impact is going to be. I'm pretty sure by that time, most European governments will have folded, you know, whether it be in France, Britain, wherever the case, Italy, possibly. Italy's already turned to the right. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But we're going to see the folding of a lot of governments. We're already seeing general strikes being called for in many, many countries. So right now, what the U.S. is encouraging Ukraine to do, they're saying that you need to publicly state that you want to negotiate with Russians while privately doing the opposite. Now, you know, they're doing this because they realize that support for the conflict is starting to wane in certain places. And they're also worried about Ukraine having the moral high ground in this war. And the only way you can have the moral high ground is if you're willing to negotiate. And that's the only way you can really play the victim, right? At least to the fullest extent. So right now, the U.S. is privately asking Ukraine to show its openness to talks. So according to them, they want to ensure that Ukraine maintains the moral high ground in the eyes of its international backers. Now, this was released by the Washington Post. So I'm pretty sure that those international backers are going to catch wind that this is all just a fraud, or that they're just doing this in order to, you know, create this illusion that they want to negotiate, when really they don't want to negotiate, because we know that the U.S. is sending tanks, they're sending more drones, 1,100 drones, they're sending more missile defense systems. The war is just in its initial phases, if you ask me. So it's going to be a rough, rough winter. We're likely going to see Ukraine turn into an all-out battle zone this winter. And honestly, if I was in Kiev right now, I would probably be, unless you're planning on digging in and fighting, then I would advise people to just get out now before the rush. Because remember, they're never going to tell you until it's too late. And that's just the name of the game. Zelensky outright said the reason why we didn't tell people that the Russians were going to invade is because we needed our military. We needed the highways clear so our military could get to places it needed. So continuity of government trumps individual needs. Now, in terms of what's happening with Britain and Ukraine, there was an interview that Sky News did with the Russian ambassador to the UK, and a terrible interview, just one of the most hostile methods of interviewing that I've ever seen. Just, you know, completely biased, one-sided coverage. Anyways, the ambassador was saying that they have proof that the UK was complicit in orchestrating and perpetrating the Nord Stream attacks, the attacks on the grain corridor, the Baltic or the Black Sea fleet, and the Crimean Bridge, and that they're going to release that in the not so distant future, and that there will be consequences. Now, remember, that's an act of war, especially when you're targeting some of the biggest critical infrastructural projects, including the Crimean Bridge, which could be deemed critical infrastructure because it's one of the few ways that Russia has into that region, at least, you know, with the train and all that stuff. Then, of course, the Nord Stream pipeline, which was partly owned by other countries as well. For whatever reason, those countries don't want to release the results of their forensic analysis. But we do know that there was a major crater. They're pretty much 100% certain that it was an explosion. And the Russians claim that it was the MI6 or some elements of the UK Navy who perpetrated it. I'm not saying that, I'm just saying that's what they think, and then according to them, then the UK is then a state sponsor of terrorism in their eyes, which essentially puts them at war with the UK. So it'll be interesting to see what develops with respect to that. Norway and Russia are on the brink of terminating their relationships, pulling their ambassadors as a result of potential nuclear weapons going into Norway, and of course all of the spying going on between those two. So something is definitely heating up there. We have Ukraine MP saying that the threat of a nuclear strike from Russia is higher than it's ever been. Again, it's from a Ukrainian MP, so take it with a grain of salt. Of course, that's what they're going to say. We have UK spies, apparently, and this one is, you know, take this one with a big grain of salt. This is what the Russians are saying, that apparently there's some UK spies within Ukraine doing stuff. I'm not even going to get into this one because, you know, I try to stay comfortably within the Overton window because I do no good to you guys if I get canceled. But you can go and research that if you want. Now, we also have a situation developing with the Iranians. So Kiev right now is urging strikes on Iran. Okay, they're urging strikes on Iran. So this is where you're starting to see the war spill over beyond Ukraine. Ukraine is actively encouraging attacks on the Iranians. That's huge. And they're saying this because, of course, the Iranians are supplying weapons to the Russians. They've openly admitted this now, that they've supplied drones to the Russians. They're saying, well, we did it before the war started. Okay, whatever. But regardless, they're going to be sending more advanced missile systems. And Ukraine's not too happy about this. Now, just consider, though, what that means, right? I mean, if we were to replicate that sort of strategy or that logic with the Russians, you know, who has been supplying Ukraine with weapons? Well, it's been every NATO country, including Turkey, who's kind of on the fence with the Russians. So, I mean, by that logic, should the Russians be attacking all the NATO countries? Obviously, that would lead to nuclear war, World War III. I think the same is very true with the Iranian situation. Now, to the Ukrainians' benefit, Netanyahu is now back in power in Israel. And he's very hawkish on the Iranian front. And he's basically saying that unless the nuclear deal can be sorted out or revised, and it's kind of a catch-22 because if the Israelis didn't want the nuclear deal in the first place, and they don't want them to not have a nuclear deal. So they're basically saying we're going to attack Iranian nuclear facilities. Are they going to do it by cyber? Are they going to do it by some asymmetrical means? I don't know. They probably will attempt to do that first, attack more nuclear scientists, whatever the case is. The tensions between Israel and Iran are about to intensify. Absent a nuclear deal, Israel will attack Iran. And this is from a longtime member of Israel's Likud party. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce this person's name, but this is on mainstream media. You guys can go and look into this. They're basically saying that Israel will attack Iran if a nuclear deal is not reached. And of course, the JCPOA deal has been shelved months ago. The United States has outright said it's likely not going to happen, definitely not anytime soon. So with the Ukrainians encouraging attack on Iran, with, you know, the fight intensifying in Syria in that proxy war, and you even have the Americans were posturing within that region with some of their naval forces recently. So things are on edge all over the world. And if there's a war that breaks out in the Middle East, these prices that we're seeing now are going to seem like the good old days. They're going to seem like when things are great. You know, I was watching a movie, I Am Legend, yesterday with my son. We both love watching that movie. And there's a scene where Will Smith is gassing up, and I think gas was at like $6.78 in that movie. I'm sure you guys remember. It's an iconic scene, I think. But we're fast approaching that time where those I Am Legend prices are going to become reality. And I still hope, as a sidebar, I still hope Will Smith makes a comeback and he does I Am Legend 2, because we need it. We need I Am Legend 2 before the apocalypse hits. Now, what else do we have to talk about? We have the U.S. who's going to be stationing nuclear-capable assets on the Korean Peninsula. Again, more nuclear-capable assets. And one thing I should have mentioned about the Iranian and Israeli situation, interesting thing to note that Iran has been a signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty since 1970. Israel, however, has never signed the NPT, and of course, they don't disclose their secret nuclear weapons programs. There's some estimates that they have hundreds of nuclear weapons. Anyways, just thought I'd add that. So, going over to the Korean Peninsula, we had a major incident just the other day where 180 North Korean planes, it's not getting enough media attention, 180 North Korean planes, while the South Koreans and the Americans are doing this major exercise, the size of which hasn't been seen since the Korean War. These planes were skirting the demarcation line, and North South Korea had to scramble jets. So now the Americans are saying, well, we're going to have to employ more strategic assets in South Korea. Do you think China is going to be happy about more strategic assets being deployed in South Korea, or even the means to just deploy them, whether it's F-35s or other missile systems that are going to be able to launch these types of strategic implements? I don't think so. I think that the Chinese are going to be quite upset about this, and this is going to lead to a greater expediency in which they try to, you know, get their military where they need to get it in order to do Taiwan and the like. And of course, North Korea is just propped up by the Chinese, by and large. They are fed by the Chinese. And right now, apparently there was footage of Russian trains flowing in and out of Korea just a couple days ago, suggesting that perhaps the Koreans are starting to supply the Russians to some extent. So you're seeing this hardening of alliances between the Iranians, the North Koreans, and all of the Axis of Evil, right? The new Axis of Evil. To them, they're just the allies. But we're starting to see a hardening of alliances, and that's very apparent when you see Ukraine saying things like, well, you guys need to attack, you know, Iran now. Next, it's going to be, well, you need to attack North Korea now, and so on and so forth. So there's just been a barrage of missiles fired back and forth and taunting going on in the Korean Peninsula, and it's only a matter of time before that situation starts to flare it up. And it seems as though the U.S., in their conferences that they're doing, are starting to direct a lot of their attention towards that. Now, are they trying to shift attention away from Ukraine because they know that Ukraine is about to be turned upside down, essentially, when the Russians do their major winter offensive? I don't know. I just don't know. All I know is you should probably pick up a Jace case from Jace Medical. Go through the link in the description below. What else do we need to talk about today? The wild weather that is going on. I talk about Kherson, I think. Yeah, I talked about Kherson and it potentially being a trap. Okay, we're past Ukraine. Let's just quickly talk about the weather here. So on the East Coast, they've been experiencing record temperatures. Toronto seen 3 days, I think, of plus 20 degree weather. Out here, we're well into the sub-zero temperatures. And this, of course, on the heels of record high temperatures that we had, I believe just a few days ago, was like almost plus 20 degrees, which is unheard of that late in October. And of course, now we've had a blizzard come through here. We're going to be getting more snow, possibly up to 2 feet of snow. And this is sharply contrasted with the East Coast, where, like I said, we're seeing a 40 degrees Celsius difference in temperatures at similar latitudes, which is just insane. And it's all due to the broken down jet stream. Now, with these erratic weather patterns, various places are built. Their critical infrastructure is tuned to a certain range of weather. And if you step too far outside that range of weather, the grid and the system cannot support it. So, like, for instance, up here, even though our roads are terrible, but a lot of our infrastructure is built to withstand very cold temperatures. Well, because the jet stream is broken, you're going to have cold temperatures in places where they're not used to having cold temperatures, and you're going to have really hot temperatures in places where they're not used to having it. So, you know, you're getting hot temperatures in places where they don't have air conditioning, just like in the UK, okay? And this creates huge stress on the market when everybody runs out to get air conditioners. Then, of course, that, you know, creates more demand on the grid. And then in other places where people might need heaters where they never needed heaters before, or, you know, like natural gas, stuff like that, where they never needed it before, And so it just disrupts the whole system, and it's going to have effects on agricultural output, just on productivity in general. I can't believe you guys have had to look at this screen this whole time. Sorry, this is just an impromptu setup. I'm in the process of stepping up our studio game a little bit here. But I just thought that, what do we got going on here? Something about Tesla. I just thought I would, you know, chime in on the weather situation, because the weather's just getting wild, and that's just going to complicate all of these supply chain woes even more. So I'd encourage you, if you haven't already, continue to stock up for the long winter that awaits, because we're going to see a lot of major incidences happen in the next few weeks, I do believe, with this Russian offensive. We're going to see exactly kind of where we stand come late December with oil prices, with energy prices. And of course, we have the election coming on Tuesday. Some people are saying that these Ukrainian objectives are being fast-tracked to somehow sway voters on election day. I don't think, I think the event would have to be pretty major at this point in order for something to sway voters this late in the game. You know, I think something very major would have to happen in Ukraine. There would almost have to be some sort of tactical nuclear strike or something, literally, in order to change somebody's mind at this point in the game. They're saying it's going to be a red wave in the United States, but I don't know anymore, because, you know, that's what they said. That's what they said last time. And you just really never know. Either way, there likely will be subsequent civil unrest, and the civil war in the United States appears to be increasing in likelihood. Let me know what you guys think in the comment section below. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. Canadian Prepper out, and get your Jace case while you can. Thanks for watching. Take care.